tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello.
You know, I feel like you'd be giving us some kind of like seductive hellos. Can we just get like, hey, what up? What it do?
Hey. Well, you know, I'm still refining my radio voice. Yeah. I don't know. It's so disorienting to hear your own voice, like, recorded.
It is.
I have to be like, who that? Who is that?
I kind of do a cognitive dissonance because I've never liked my voice on record. So I just hear my sister instead because we sound exactly alike. So it makes it easier. So there's a lot of things that we want to talk about. So I'm going to jump right into it because I'm super confused by the feedback coming out of this week's episode of Insecure. So Insecure on Sunday was called Hella Blows, which is funny. They did a little twisty twist. And so let me just do the warning. If you have not watched Hella Blows yet, just scroll forward. Like, you don't want to hear the rest of what we're about to talk about because we're going to go in. In Hella Blows, there are two things going on that I want to talk about. So on the one hand, we have the women who go to Sexplosion. And basically, what I liked about the fact that they went to the Sex Expo is it kind of, even though it was already recorded and whatnot, it is a bit of a response to the critique that people have had, including myself, in recent weeks about the lack of safe sex emphasis on the show, because it was all about safer sex. Like, they had some ignorant nonsense talking about, oh, we got to use condoms when we give blowjobs. And the woman was like, yes. So they, you know, they were at a stand for safer sex products. So it was great. But the real deal was, obviously, this conversation that they have at the Sexpo around giving head. And, you know, some people were like, this show is, you know, breaking boundaries and doing all the things, but this felt really regressive. A lot of people said that and said that it felt like it could have been edgy in 1993, but this is 2017, because some of the comments were, for one, there was the typical trope that the Beckys of the world get Black men to put a ring on it because they offer head, Black women don't. But I felt like within the group, there were a lot of different opinions happening. Like, the one who is perhaps the biggest freak, she said she doesn't do it anymore because of a musty ball situation when she was in 11th grade. So she hasn't given head since then.
Molly, not a musty ball situation.
That's not cute. Molly said, on the other hand, for example, that, you know, she will offer it in reciprocity, but the man has to go down first. Hey, I have no problems with that. Issa was like,
maybe get really distracted after.
All of a sudden they tired and whatnot. Right. Issa was like, you know, she'll do it if she's really involved with someone. She won't just do it on the fly. And of course, Amanda Seale's character was the one who also has the ring on her finger, who was like, you better get with it. You better learn the artistry of it if you want to keep a man. And to be honest, those are all conversations that I've had with women. So a lot of people, even like Gene Demby from Code Switch, was like, that conversation felt, you know, he tweeted, that conversation felt really weird. And I felt like, well, what was weird about it? Maybe because you're a man, you haven't sat around those types of conversations. But as a Black woman, I have sat in those conversations. I've been a part of those conversations. And it didn't feel weird to me at all. I feel like some of the criticism coming from Black women talking about, you know, this is regressive and this is an old conversation has more to do with the fact that we're just different generations. So you have the millennials, who I can remember in the U.S. specifically, even though I wasn't even in the U.S. at the time, there was a time where giving a blowjob was considered less intimate than kissing. They actually did surveys in certain schools that showed that kids were, you know, conducting or participating in oral sex and thinking that it was less intimate than kissing.
Or if you grew up, you know, as a zennial,
right?
Yeah. Go on. If you grew up in an abstinence-only environment, thinking that it's not really sex at all because sex is really
only penetration.
Penetration focused, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
So I feel like there's like the Gen X folks watching this show. I feel like there are the Zennials like me watching this show. I feel like there are millennials watching this show, and there might might even be like the post-millennial folks watching the show. And, you know, the show includes people of the 20s and 30s, right? So it's going to speak to different people. And I don't really get the criticism. Do you get the criticism?
Oh, yeah.
What's the criticism? Did you feel like it was regressive?
It was, because it kind of was... There was some criticism around, like, why is it acting like Black folks are not sexually liberated? Like, Black folks ain't been having oral sex and all kinds of sex.
But it wasn't generalized. It was a statement of who these women are. And it didn't seem like it was out of character for any of them. That Molly would give head out of reciprocity seems to fit her character, in my opinion. And that Issa just continues to be awkward and prefer and had is coming out of a relationship of what, 5 years or 7 years, however long she was in a relationship with Lawrence. She hasn't had like a lot of partners. That's what we're seeing in her rotation right now. Her harem is not working out.
I don't know. I think this thing about Issa's hang-ups and whatever, and exposing them for what they are, could maybe be helpful, especially for people who get shamed for just normal things like coming during a blowjob.
Yeah, that was her. Yeah, her overreaction to that was very interesting. We'll see where it goes in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there have been similar reactions to women ejaculating.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And I've never seen that on TV.
It's illegal now. You can't show that in the UK, the porn.
Wait, you can't show ejaculation?
A female ejaculation specifically.
Wow. Wow. So just the female one.
Yeah.
But the male one's cool.
But actually, one article, I think it was the Daily Beast, they took on a lot of different angles. They were actually quite excited about it. And they said that this is probably the first time that you've seen male ejaculation in this way. And they went through all kinds of things. They went through Californication and girls and whatnot. And that white male writer said this is the first time that you see male ejaculation in this way on a mainstream television channel. But, I mean, we don't get to define what liberation is, right? Like Kelly, who is a freak, in my opinion, she was getting fingered under the table at a fast food restaurant at the end of one of the episodes. And there wasn't any type of outcry about that. So why is there an outcry when they have a conversation around what they will and won't do? Not if it would have been anal sex, would it have still felt regressive? Because that's another thing, right? People say that the Beckys do anal sex, Black women don't. So would it have been conceived as regressive to have that traded out instead of the blowjob anal sex?
I think it's a tough one for women, because I feel, especially in heteronormative relationship, there's this feeling that the male's desires are the only function of sex, right? Or sexual encounters. So I can understand a woman feeling like, I'm not interested in doing things that are specifically catered towards male desire. And I'm definitely not doing things where I know that these basic dudes will devalue me for expressing it in that way, or doing it too randomly, or doing it too soon in the relationship. There's so many rules, right, around that. This virgin, this Madonna whore kind of complex that sure. A lot of dudes have when they're dealing with women. So I can understand that. I think that's why for a lot of people, same-sex relationships feel so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's because that power dynamic doesn't exist in the same way all the time. And when you're dealing with similar parts, there's definitely this comprehension and understanding of mutual pleasure in a way that doesn't necessarily always exist in heteronormative relationships. So this thing that happened and dealing with someone's like sexual hangups, first of all, talking about sex in a puritanical America is already fraught problems, right? Like fraught with so many assumptions and exotification.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people bringing their own baggage to the conversation of dealing and talking about this. That it's really hard to have like an open and honest discussion about it. I think it's also really interesting that there's all this criticism on the show about the show that they weren't having enough visible condom use.
Mm-hmm.
And this entire situation could have been prevented had there been condom usage. The entire
especially considering crisis. At the sexpo, they were taught that they should be using condoms even for blowjobs.
Right.
That's why they had like the flavored condoms on display.
Right. And I think that it's very consistent in character that somebody who isn't necessarily fully comfortable with safer sex methods may also have a tremendous amount of misinformation and discomfort with sex, all aspects of it, different kinds of sex,
right.
Bodily fluids, mm-hmm. Natural things that happen.
Because there's I find
a lot of cognitive dissonance in people that aren't fully comfortable with safer sex methods. And that they divorce themselves from science. They divorce themselves from the laws of nature, right? They mm-hmm. divorce themselves from empirical evidence. They divorce themselves from basic logic in the sense of like, oh, if someone's being stimulated at some point, they may it's very probable that they may climax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that means X, Y, Z will happen. And it, you know, it's going to go all over places. It might go on my eye, right? So that's hard. I think it's hard also for straight women to agree to and talk about all different kinds of sex and pleasuring within their relationships without also putting into context their potential debasement because of being somewhat free sexually. And I think it wasn't really about the sex act for her. It was about what this bodily fluid on her body represented mm-hmm. and what it meant.
Well, you know, just shifting gears slightly, the other thing that I wanted to talk about is the situation between Dro and Molly. Now, everyone is writing this whole quote unquote open relationship off as he's telling lies. Now, as someone wholly embraces non-monogamy, I'm just like, you know, I could personally say that's really regressive that people are writing this off, that it's not possible for Black people who are married to be in an open relationship. I mean, isn't that what Monique built her whole podcast around? But I have to say, this incident now at the end of this last episode does make me question if it really is an open relationship. Because if you're in an open relationship, if you are doing consensual non-monogamy, then you have communicated that you have rented a hotel room to do the things that you want to do with your new sexual partner, right? There is no way, because agreements exist in consensual non-monogamy, there is no way that your partner is going to call you, that you're going to respond, first of all, to a call that you don't know who it's from. It's just some generic ringtone. You're going to respond to a phone call, see that it's your wife, answer the phone, who then tells you that she's locked out, and you're going to jump up after you were massaging someone's clitoris.
Wow.
Leave the situation to go let them in, and then also not come back. Like, that's the end of the romantic situation in the hotel. So that does lead me to believe that maybe this is not an open relationship. But
right. And if it is an open relationship, he clearly has his priorities tilted towards his wife being his highest priority, right?
Right.
Even if his wife knows. I mean, because there's so many different things that could have happened, right? Like, he could have been like, you know what? Come to the hotel and pick up the key from the concierge. I'm going to leave it with him right now.
For example.
Right? And she had 2 feet and she in LA. I know she got a car.
Right.
Right. Like, and she could have come to the hotel, picked up the key and been about her business. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been what it was. So the fact that, you know, there was the sense that he couldn't like communicate where he was.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sense that he couldn't deal with the situation with a solution that felt equitable, that
right.
felt logical.
Right.
That he's just not equipped, or he's lying. And also there's this men are trash, right? Like, so in the sense of toxic masculinity that lends itself to believe that, like, okay, you know, most of the, in my personal experience, most of the men I knew that were non-monogamous were also completely dishonest with their mm-hmm. primary partners, completely. Right. They just could not envision a way to do that in a way that wouldn't be exploitive. And even the ones who had some level of agreements with their primary partners, they felt at some point needs to not honor those agreements.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, like, it seemed like it would have been a very basic agreement. Like, could you not with mutual friends? Could you not with
right.
a childhood friend?
For example.
Right. Like that seems like a very basic sort of agreement that one would come to in non-monogamy, so you don't disrupt the entire ecosystem of friendships. And yeah, Molly is not trusting her intuition,
right.
So she's going to get in trouble for that.
Sure.
Anytime you have a feeling that is bad about something, either you need to clear it up before you move on, or you need to walk away from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And she just didn't have the patience and the discipline to clear it up before she moved on. And she was so uncomfortable with the situation. I don't think she feels comfortable talking about it, even if it is a completely up and up situation.
Right.
So she's going to pay for that.
That's so great that you've mentioned that. Molly doesn't feel comfortable herself talking about it. And I think that's what people are missing with this critique of different aspects of the show. I feel like everything that we're seeing in these characters, especially in season two, is so aligned with who these characters are. They're not just like giving us a plot that we want because we want it. They're giving us a plot that is in line and authentic and true to the characters that they've built. And Molly is not a good communicator. We've seen that. I mean, neither is Issa, but Molly is really tight-lipped. She can't even communicate with her therapist.
And she communicates so inappropriately with her parents that she got to blurt things out at the end of her. Yeah.
That was deep. Yeah.
I really feel like that's a foreshadowing. I think that that's what happens with her, is that she bottles things up and then explodes. And I feel like we're headed towards some sort of climax explosion.
Perhaps. I mean, Yvonne Orji, who plays Molly, said in an interview with Vulture recently, quote, "There is that pressure to be all things to all people, and whether it's fair or not, it is what it is. I think what we try to be on the show is authentic and honest to the story we want to tell and the voice we want to have. That doesn't mean that there's no margin for error. It doesn't mean that we're going to be callous. It just means we're doing the best we can with what we have," end quote. And I think that's fair.
Here's the thing that's frustrating for me watching Insecure is the cyclical nature of it. This mm-hmm. just happened with Being Mary Jane as well. Is that after a
Being Mary Jane, she gets on my nerves. Uh-oh. I still watch it, but she get on my damn nerves. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry.
After a while, you just want people to freaking grow.
Well, this is season two. This is season two. Everyone is in new Tehran right now.
Uh-huh. I need some more wins. Do you understand? I mean, I think it was, I feel like a lot of times with these shows, it's one step forward, two steps back. And I get that we're not all recreating the Cosby Show, right? Like, I get that we're not just recreating Black respectability and like perfect characters that, you know, supermen are in their own lives, so to speak. But I do want more evolution.
I think you have to give them time. You have to be fair. Not a lot of time is passing between these episodes, right? So mm-hmm. at the end of season one, where we had the breakup, though, specifically, this is a couple that have been together for a very long time. That's not something that you just like, even though Issa's trying real hard with her little hotation, it's not something that you do quickly. They're young. They were in the relationship. They grew up together, basically. And now they're on their own and they're trying to figure that out. Lawrence hasn't worked in 2 years and is in his first job. He recognizes what it means to be like a diversity hire at a tech company. Those are all things that in your, you know, 20s and early 30s, it does take a little bit of time to figure out. And this show is from a date and time perspective, slow paced. There's mm-hmm. a lot happening in those days, but it's a slow pace as far as how much time has passed. I think we have to give them a little bit of chance.
I just, you know, there's all my children's.
Wow. All my
children's. Kind of aspect.
To all my children.
People recreating the same dramas in their life or similar dramas in their lives over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm just not attracted to, which is, yeah, and to be fair, I'm much more attracted to film format than TV format, right?
Okay.
For that reason, is that I want a beginning, middle, and end. And with TV format, it's just like, let me tell you these like little vignettes, but character evolution is very slow paced, as you said. So, yeah, that's hard.
Well, before we end this segment, you want to say something about the VMAs that nobody watches anymore? I was even surprised. I was like, what, the VMAs?
Somebody said very aptly, there is no mystery around the VMAs. There was no Beyonce. And also, it was happening at the same time as the Game of Thrones finale.
Ooh, was it?
Yes, yes.
That's crazy.
Like, girl, know your enemy. Like, know your competition. Know want to take an L. No one to reschedule. Like, yo, B, no. Don't do it to yourself.
I didn't even think about that.
So it's happening at Game of Thrones finale, and there's no Beyonce. And, you know,
why would Beyonce come? She just had twins.
Hmm?
Why would Beyonce come? She's not going to be
there. But, you know, here's the thing about Breakfast
Was
Kittles.
Anyone
people
worth
don't
talking
understand.
About? Well, I guess Nicki okay, and so Remy Cardi Ma B. took a shot at Nicki, talking about Nicki was good.
Who said that?
Remy said that to Nicki. It wasn't like a direct thing. It was like, you know, she wasn't even out. She was like somewhere, you know, mm-hmm. doing like the little segment. Hey, and this is what's coming up next. And she was like, Nicki, what's good? They probably even whispered in her ear to say that, to be honest, because it didn't feel like a Remy thing. She didn't even seem like super comfortable saying it. But, you know, Bodak Yellow is like kind of the thing right now. So Cardi B is sticking her tongue out at every turn.
Here's the thing, though, is that I'm rooting for Cardi. I want her to happen. Now, there's been some drama surrounding Cardi, especially with the queer community, with her transphobia and with some stuff that she said in the past. And here's the thing that people don't understand.
She apologized about that, though. She called them out. She was like, no. When I used the word tranny, I didn't know that it was offensive.
Exactly.
People called her on it, and she apologized immediately. And like, she had the receipts.
But here's the thing, is that with people still bringing it up, here's what people don't understand, is that all of this terminology and stuff requires exposure and education.
Right.
And when you're dealing with someone who you're lifting up or super intrigued by because they're so hood, right? Like, they come from a very specific yeah. place.
Right.
They come from a place where you know they didn't have the education,
right?
That's part of their brand. And you know they didn't have the exposure, also part of their brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a misstep and you just are like, fuck you then, you're canceled, right? Which is what a lot of people try to do with Cardi. It's so messed up. Because
this is
just like,
how many times have we talked about this, though? In the queer community, the whole language thing, it's annoying. It's annoying because if that's enough to make someone disposable because they're not up to date on like the newest term or the newest whatever, because let's be honest, she's from New York. She's from a certain part of New York. And a word like tranny gets thrown around from people within the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she might not, I'm not saying that makes it right, but I'm saying her environment is somewhere where she would have heard that word and may not have had any context for the transphobic aspects of it. But it's not even about defending Cardi. It's just like, why do we always do this with I want you to go out and talk to Taylor about her nonsense of a video where she has clearly copied Bae and claims not to be, where she is talking about she's moving on, but she's bringing up every petty incident that has happened in her life. I don't even keep up with Taylor.
Right.
And she has like 11 Taylors or 13 Taylors out in this video talking about she moving on. And then she can't even like take responsibility for it. You made me do.
Yeah. This is classic white woman.
You know?
Whiting again. Yeah, I mean, Taylor Swift is another story. But getting back to Cardi B, I want her to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appeal to you, Cardi B, get you a vocal coach. Get you somebody who knows how to make you do live music when you're in a live show that is being nationally syndicated.
Oh, what's her
because
performance?
That is
that good?
She sang over the track, boo. And
I mean,
that
sings over that, the track.
Not like that. It was on some Britney level past it was a Britney in Las Vegas level. You don't want that in your life.
Oh.
Like it was like your mouth is doing one thing and a track is doing something totally different.
You know that's what Chris Brown did the first time he performed on the VMAs.
That's not cute.
He was dancing and lip singing.
I know there's a lot of pressure. But there shouldn't be drag queens that are beating you at that game, right? Like, you need to have your live show be better than the drag version of Cardi B. How about that? Because they are doing that. They are lip syncing to your joint. You should do better. Elton John put it best. He was like, you couldn't pay.
You're not going to quote when he was coming for Janet. You're not going to quote
Sir
him
John,
when he was coming for Janet. Janet done lost her 60 pounds. She bringing it. So we gonna but stop.
That's not what he was talking about, though.
Yes, he was. He was talking about the fact that people paid to see her and she was lip syncing.
That's what it was. But what's it got to do with pounds, though?
Because she was, Janet has always struggled with weight. When she loses the weight, she's able to keep up the stamina to sing and dance.
Wait, she can't sing till she loses the weight? Damn.
It's because she focuses on the dancing. You need to pay attention. You gonna bring up people? Next.
I'm co-signing him on that. Sorry.
In this week's second segment, I'm going to stay with pop culture, but a different type of pop culture. You know, what makes me angry is when people like who are actually doing good in the world are made disposable of because they use incorrect language or they're trying to have a conversation that people aren't ready for. Mm-hmm. But everyone and their mama will pay big money to go see a man who's a racist fight a man who is a serial domestic abuser. And no one has an issue with that. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the most expensive fight to have ever taken place, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Explain it to me. Can you explain to me why it's okay to beat women over decades and pay good money, apparently, to keep all pictures out of the media and then rely on that argumentation to say that those are allegations that have never been proved? Bruh, you have been in jail. You have served time. You have pleaded guilty. That ish is proved, okay? Beyond a reasonable doubt.
But it's the culture of celebrity, right?
Is it? I think or is it specific to boxing?
It's celebrity is currency. And that has been commodified so interestingly in recent years. In ways that it has never been commodified before. There used to be a time when people were like, no, you know, like the gatekeepers would have been like, no, we couldn't sell this because XYZ happened or something went down. But what people understand now is that notoriety, all celebrity is currency, right? All celebrity is currency. Mm-hmm. So however people know my name, if 5 million people know my name, there's a way for me to commodify that. And if 10, 15, 20 million people know my name, I could commodify it even more. So that's what's happening here. People know the name and they have some sort of idea. And most people don't know the nitty details of why and how and they know the name. Most people that know Floyd Mayweather's name don't know that he's a wife beater. They don't know that. Most people that know his name have not read the police report from his 10-year-old son detailing how brutally he beat his wife at the time. They haven't read all that. So there's a lot of people that know the name and they know him in a like he's a boxing person, right? Like, so that kind of thing. But they don't know all of these details. So there's that, is that all kinds of celebrities can
be commodified. You're being very generous right now, but okay.
Mm-hmm. I am being generous. And then there's a take from someone we both know, Emma Dabiri, the diaspora diva on Twitter. Right, that's her handle, who is Black and Irish and does a lot of work and thinking and about that, where she talks about McGregor being this white supremacist and being this racist dude. And even though she fully understood the brutality of Mayweather, that she says, and I quote, "I get that Mayweather is a wife beater. I am not a fan, but I couldn't handle all that McGregor beat that nigger delight that would have." So she also understood that there were a lot of white supremacists that were backing McGregor, mm-hmm. specifically for his dog whistle stuff that he was putting out there about, like, you know, this boy ain't got nothing on me because, you know, I'm more intelligent. I'm, you know, all the white supremacist nonsense. And she goes on to talk about how people were backing McGregor specifically because of his white supremacy, but you didn't have people backing Mayweather because they felt like it would vindicate abusers, right? You didn't have like a whole cult of abusers that were backing Mayweather being like, this is a score for abusers, right? So what wins would mean in different cases were different. Now the fight was going to happen, right? There's nothing people could do. Emma can't stop it. I can't stop the fight. The fight is going to happen. But like, how do we take something that's already problematic and understand greater than less than, right? Like, or try to tease out or analyze what a win looks like in one context as opposed to another context, right?
Well, look, so I'm not in the U.S. And so it's sometimes hard to completely gauge the sentiment around things, right? Because I'm not only listening to U.S. pundits. But Damon Young from Very Smart Brothers wrote about this very thing that Emma wrote about, right? And he also says, quote, but what also happened is that in order to justify rooting for someone so unapologetically abhorrent, some, in parentheses, Black fans attached a greater meaning to last night. Mayweather's victory wasn't just a victory against some white dude who had zero chance of actually beating him. He beat racism and racists. He beat gentrification and appropriation. He socked every standing statue of Robert E. Lee in the nuts. He set fire to a Make America Great Again hat and then pissed on the ashes and then used those ashes to light a tiki torch, end quote. Obviously, Damon Young does not support this, but he's explaining what it meant to some people. He goes on to say, we ain't win shit last night, right?
This is the complexity and this is the horrible position that Black and racism, anti-Black racism specifically, puts Black people in. And that on the one hand, you want to support victims of domestic violence, victims of sexual violence. But on the other hand, you understand that anytime a Black body goes into the criminal justice system, it's going to receive unfair, unequal, and sometimes brutally deadly treatment, right? So there's this horrible calculus that you have to do in your head. And a lot of times for some people, that calculus is simplified into Bill Cosby didn't do it. It's simplified into R. Kelly was proven not guilty, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what it's simplified into, because there's this sense of like, we know that we cannot rely on formal systems to actually achieve justice within our community with intra-community violence. Intra-community violence, we know we can't rely on the justice systems fully to receive that, because the way that they view all of us is so dehumanizing, mm-hmm. that there's this compulsion to just minimize the violence. There's this compulsion to just rally together and focus on this like larger looming threat that all of us face, which is racism, which is white supremacy, right?
But how do I forgive someone who I like, who pays big money to go to a Floyd Mayweather Jr. fight? J-Lo was in the house with her boo. Cardi B was in the house. I mean, actually, the house wasn't packed, apparently. The house could have sat something like 20,000 guests, but they made the tickets so expensive that only, you know, 14,000 plus were able to afford to be there. But, you know, people are congratulating him online, from Black comedians that I like to Black women that I like. Tamar Braxton was up in his comments. There was, you know, and not just up in the comments, like actually posting so I have to see it, because obviously I don't follow Floyd Mayweather Jr., but people like Tamar Braxton are congratulating him.
It was tiny there.
But then there was like, what? There was B. Scott, right? And B. Scott will come for anybody's neck. It's very hilarious. It's always like a little sly line at the end to show shade. But even B. Scott was like, congratulations. And it's very frustrating that this man, and I'm not going to do any what ifs, but this man who specifically beats Black women is like, okay.
And Chris Brown is still getting all the party invites.
There you go.
That's what's up. I mean, did any of R. Kelly's concerts get canceled? Any? A one?
I think there was a big protest, though, when he was invited to Pitchfork. He still performed, though.
See? So until we levy some sort of the only kind of justice at this point that Black women have been able to get that feels anyway equitable and just has been from their own communities, because there's this violence that happens when you're dealing with the authorities. And so the one thing that your community can do is to believe you and to support you in that belief. And these are all those names that you mentioned just don't strike me as woke enough to do that level of work.
I can mention more names, but I don't want to put people on blast. Right. I can mention a whole bunch of names.
They just don't strike me as people that are willing to sacrifice something that they may personally want, like a night out watching the big fight that everyone's talking about, to support victims of domestic violence or to make a statement about why it's not okay, even in their personal life.
Yeah. And just for anyone who's listening to this who thinks maybe we're exaggerating or we're not, okay? There's plenty of documentation online. Mayweather's record of domestic abuse reaches back to 2001. There's 2001, there's 2003, there's 2005, there's 2010, okay? And when he was specifically asked about it, he is a great media person. Once in an interview on ESPN, he said that it was in the past. People talk about domestic violence because he was only restraining someone. He doesn't hit people. He doesn't knock them out. That's what he does in the ring. He restrains people who are trying to attack him. And for all of the negative things that have been said about him, no one's been able to defeat him inside or outside of the ring because he's beat all the odds. That's how well he was able to twist that sword. And the reporter left it.
So he also dog whistles around this anti-Black racism too, right? Like he puts out this, I mean, yeah, Kelly has done
doing.
This.
That's what he's doing.
Bell, Bill Cosby has done this. And Chris Brown has done this. It's like, y'all trying to keep down a good Black man. And he said in that same quote about restraining, he says, for so many years, they tried to defeat me in so many different ways as far as negative things, but I couldn't be defeated inside the ring. So they tried to defeat me on the outside. Did people want to see me fall? Absolutely. But I beat all odds. That is, end quote. Okay, that is a Muhammad Ali-esque statement. But Muhammad Ali was fighting
a real racism, fight,
a real fight, right? Like he was fighting for his people. He wasn't fighting his wife. He wasn't fighting women in general in Las Vegas nightclubs. He wasn't being, you know, I mean.
No, Floyd Mayweather.
It's so cynical. It's so cynical what he's doing right now. And he knows what he's doing. Black men know they can play this card anytime they're accused of hitting or stomping down a Black woman, right? Mm. Even Clarence Thomas, when he was back in the day, when he was when Anita Hill came out with the allegations against him and got real with how he sexually harassed her so horribly.
Watch the documentary, people. Watch the documentary.
This is a high-tech lynching. Remember that? So he invokes that. And so Black men always know that they can commit violence.
So what do we call what he's been doing against Black people ever since in the legal system? Is that illegal lynching?
That's a whole different story. Black men know that they can commit violence against Black women. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, appeal to their community sense of, well, I'm an endangered Black man. And you see how they come at me. I'm doing good in the world, especially if they have anything on their CV, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a fight or some R&B tracks or, you know.
It doesn't take much.
Or some comedy. Anything on their CV then becomes the mark on their back to take them down because, you know, Black men can't succeed, right? So it becomes this either or proposition. That's why Black feminism is so important. It holds all people accountable.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
Well, it is in the news that they are going to be doing a revamp of Living Single.
What?
That's going to be interesting. But they said it's in the works. And I feel like the success of Girls Trip added momentum to that,
sure,
right?
Of course.
So now that they've had Girls Trip under their belt, like now there's momentum for them to move forward with, you know, all these other side projects that they can, or smaller projects that they can do. So that's
Queen Latifah is already in a show. She's in Star. She's in that Lee Daniels show.
Can we do something without Lee Daniels or Tyler Perry? Now you have all of this industry experience, you have people with all this media experience, people that have consumed a diversity of media and have so many resources at their disposal. So I feel like the potential for that show in the wake of Being Mary Jane, in the wake of Girlfriends, in the wake of Insecure, in the wake of all this like really awesome TV shows, Blackish, for example, that have happened around Black evolution. It's amazing. And you know, by the way, they come in with Grownish. So TV is bringing some stuff. And a side note on what I'm late with, but excited about, mm-hmm. is American Gods.
Oh, you just now getting to that? Oh,
okay. I just got to it. I'm so late. I'm sorry. I have to catch up.
It was a steep intro, but it's around episode 4, I was like, yeah, I'm feeling this now for sure.
Right. So I just had a staycation, so I got to catch up on a lot of things that had been like a little bit late on. And I didn't know, first of all, there was that much diversity in American Gods.
Yeah.
That gay scene was my whole life. Woo! With the chakras. Another thing I am excited about on that front is that trans character on Queen Sugar.
Okay, so you're spoiling things.
I'm not.
Actually, I already read that. I did already read that.
They already put it out.
But I haven't seen it myself yet.
I'm not saying anything about the evolution of said character or what said character does.
I did read it. Yes.
Right? There's some stuff in there to unpack that we'll unpack after the episodes. Everybody's have time. But I'm glad that that exists, right? You have an all Black show or a mostly Black show, and they have said, you know, we're going to put bisexuality on here. We're going to put trans people on here. So not only are they dealing with queer issues, but they're dealing with these margins of queer issues.
Yep.
Right? So I love it. I'm very happy about it. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Netflix keeps bothering me. They're like, the Defenders are up. Why haven't you watched them yet? The Defenders are up. And I'm like, I'm going to get to it, Netflix. I have a backlog of things right now. I'm excited about it. I'm going to get to it. But I will say, I haven't watched the one that got such bad ratings. So I'm hoping that The Defenders is going to be better. Obviously, I watched Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Daredevil, but I didn't watch it. Yeah. I heard it was so bad. Like, everybody was like, don't.
Iron Fist is just making you mad.
Did not watch it. Do plan on watching The Defenders. I am very excited about it as well, but I haven't gotten to it yet. So it's kind of hard to, like, be excited in the excited part of the program because I haven't watched it yet. But anyway.
And there's some plot points that depend on you watching Iron Fist, unfortunately. I mean, like, you won't be lost, but.
Really? Some... Do I have to watch it?
You don't have to. But for me, like, I like to see, like, where did this character appear before, of course. And that kind of stuff. And you got people that are.
Because I watched Jessica Jones before I watched Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, Rosario, hello. And then I went back and watched Daredevil, and I was like, how do you let that go?
I know, right?
Okay, but I won't say too much, because not everybody's watched these things.
So you've seen Luke Cage, though, of course, right?
Yeah.
I just have to say, I put in there that Rafael Sadiq did like my tweet about Luke Cage. I'm so excited about that. Oh, my gosh. I still think about that. Rafael, call me. Call me. One of the most underrated musicians of my lifetime, for sure. You know, Rafael.
Yeah, in mainstream, I'd say. I'd agree, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you have time and a little bit of cash, hit up our Patreon page, patreon.com/thequeertruth, so that we can keep moving on in 2018. Until next time, peace out.